Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Hear my words and bear witness to my vow. Night gathers and now my watch begins. It shall not end until my death. I shall take no wife, hold no lands, father no children. I shall wear no crowns and win no glory. I shall live and die at my post. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the shield that guards the realm of men. I pledge my life and honor to the Night's Watch. For this night, and all the nights to come.
Hello and welcome to Still Watching Game of Thrones. I am Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
We are back for one of our biggest episodes yet. We are counting down the top 15 episodes of Game of Thrones. When we were putting together this list, we knew there was no way we could do this without talking about Season 3, Episode 9, The Reigns of Castamere, written by Weiss and Benioff, directed by David Nutter. It's the episode of television that changed television forever. Here's my 15-word recap. It goes like this. Edmure Tully gets made. here we go. This is the episode that a lot of people film their friends watching. This is, I think, the last moment that book readers really, really had a hand up over, I guess Jon Snow getting stabbed was something.
And the purple wedding.
Okay, fine, fair. We still have a lot of things.
But this was the big one that everyone was just like, wait till you get to this. Yeah. You know, like this was, I was certainly that asshole who was just like, Jesse, wait, you know.
Exactly. And I think Weiss and Benioff have said as well, like everyone who worked on Game of Thrones said, like, we just wanted to see if we could get to the end of season three. And if we could pull that off, we felt like we could do anything. And I think you see a different kind of confidence from them starting in season four that they landed it. They did it. They stuck the landing. This is a tremendous episode of television. We're going to hand out a few awards before we talk about more of our thoughts on the episode. And then we've got an interview with the director of the episode, David Nutter. So stay tuned. But first, we are going to talk about, I'm going to say who my obvious MVP of this episode is. And it's a crowded field, actually. But I'm going to give it to David Bradley, who plays Lord Walder Frey. There's a lot of great Starks and other people in this episode, but it doesn't all come together unless you've got the right person, like, sneering from that chair, which he does from, like, start to finish in this episode. David Bradley himself, what do you say, Richard?
I would go Michelle Fairley, who plays Catelyn Stark. It's her final performance on the show, and she, you know, this part was originally going to be played by Jennifer Ely, who filmed the pilot, and then Jennifer Ely, for personal reasons, decided not to do the project. Michelle Fairley, an Irish theater actress, came on board, and she's great throughout her three-season run, but, like, just so fucking fantastic in this last horrific scene. And I love that it centers on her in it, you know. I think that it could have easily focused more on Rob, but I think having it be Catelyn, who's already suffered a number of great tragedies, I think is really smart, and Michelle Fairley carries it perfectly.
I don't know if Michelle Fairley either had a cold that day or just her voice was, like, raw from doing so many takes or whatever, but, like, it's just, she's just so done by the end of this episode.
Yeah.
she just leaves everything out there. It's just incredible. We've given a lot of love to Richard Madden over these episode rewatches, and like much love to him in this episode too. But yeah, this is a Michelle Fairley showstopper. She's so good. My sneaky sort of dumb MVP from this episode is Will Champion from Coldplay, who plays one of the members of the band up in the rafters, in the hall here at the Twins. And I just like these early days, before Ed Sheeran cameos, when it was just like, Will Champion's a huge fan of the show and just wants to like be a random drummer, when the Reigns of Castamere start playing. So there you go. Will Champion from Coldplay. Who's your sneaky MVP?
I don't know, like maybe Osha, who, you know, she's so sweet to Rick in this episode where, you know, because they have to make this really hard decision to separate the brothers, for Rickon's safety. And I think that Osha plays such a crucial role in that. And, you know, I think that her role and that of the Reeds, Jojen, and, his sister,
Mira,
who, their roles in this show kind of didn't quite take off the way that I'd hoped. I think the Reeds are a little more interesting in the books, but, yeah, anyway, I think that like we haven't done much talking about the brand storyline, so I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah. Natalie Tenya, who plays Osha, that's two Harry Potter actors, by the way, David Bradley, Natalie Tenya, Tonks, and I forget his character.
Filch,
name.
Right?
Filch. Yeah. Argus Filch. There you go. Yeah, she's great. She's fantastic. She's so good. And this is the episode where she's just like, no, I'm not going north of the wall. And she gives a whole speech about like the whites and what happened to her like old lover and stuff like that. And it's really incredible. So, that's a really good nomination. All right. Here's the part where I like spin out disastrously trying to perform a quote, and then Richard comes through with his, drama kid credentials. But here's my best, Wilder Frey impression. I can always see what's going on beneath the dress. which is something he says to Talisa when he's like, I know you're pregnant. You can't hide it under a billowy dress. He's so disgusting. He also, like, in that same speech, he's like, I bet if you take that dress off, like, nothing moves even an inch. Like, he's disgusting and perfect. Richard, what's your quote from the episode?
No more hodering. It's just Brand saying no more hoardering.
A very good Brand quote. Yeah. I loved it.
That's cute.
All right. And then we also want to give out a best dressed award. I'm going to give this to Roose Bolton, who sensibly wore some chainmail underneath his wedding finery so that he could be ready for battle at the Red Wedding. Who is your best dressed, Richard?
I mean, that's a pretty good one. I think that for going kind of... just kind of like simple cash at a wedding, Talisa looks pretty good in her, you know, sort of gray, just sack dress.
yeah, I love a gray sack dress at a wedding. Well, like Talisa is trying so hard not to insult them. Like there's a part also where Rob tries to kiss her and she's like, no, don't, let's not, like, let's just not insult them. So she's like trying to like show up as demure and like as possible and just sort of hang back, you know? Also, shout out to Edmure's actual bride, because she looks lovely, that Frey girl.
Very, very young, though.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's gross. All right. Ship, who am I shipping in this episode? Which two characters do I want to be together in a romantic fashion in this episode? Why not Dario and Jorah? Like, let's just cut Daenerys out of this love triangle. Or maybe I'm shipping a thruple, which is Dario, Jorah, and Grey Worm, as they like work together in perfect harmony to take the city of Yunkai for Daenerys. So that's my ship. How about you?
I'm gonna be kinky and say old Dario and new Dario.
Ooh,
because we got old Dario in this one.
Yeah, original flavor Dario.
Ed Skrein, like, right? Yeah,
Skrein or Screen. I really like original flavor Dario, I have to say.
It's a different, like, take on the character.
It's very different, and I think it's better. Like, or I just like it better as, like, this kind of shitty guy that Daenerys is just interested in for a while, you know?
It's less romance novel-y. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Michel Huisman, like, he's good on the show, and he's obviously very handsome, but, like, he's more of this kind of, like, sensitive, sort of soulful, you know, kind of type, where I think this version of Dario is just kind of like a brute. And I think that's kind of a more interesting thing. And I think probably given her, you know, her taste in men thus far is maybe more where Danny would go.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michelle Huseman's take on it is like, he's like a rake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I think, Ed Skrein's like, he's just slimier.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I like that about him. So, yeah, so there we go. So this episode, I mean, like, what do you think, Richard, when people say this, credit this episode with changing the TV landscape forever, like, how accurate do you think that is? What do you think about it, was so revolutionary?
Well, I don't know that I can offer that much insight in terms of what it changed beyond beyond the show itself, but like, in solidifying this show as the must-see thing on Sunday nights or whenever it aired in whatever country you live in, like, this episode solidified the show as like a global phenomenon, you know, as something that was merciless, that was uncompromising, that was gonna, you know, completely upend our typical expectations of how lead characters in television shows are treated. Which they'd already done arguably in the first season with, Ned's death that was very surprising at the time. But I think that maybe people thought, okay, that's the big hook. That's the first season surprise to get us all engaged, but they're not going to do that again. And they not only did it again, they did it with two main characters who'd been there since the very beginning. Which is pretty significant. And yeah, so I think in terms of the Red Wedding is the most iconic. This is the most iconic episode of the show that there's ever been, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it feels so far away. Like, it feels so distant. But I don't think you have Game of Thrones, the global phenomenon, without this episode, without this stake-raising thing. The fact that, they could not have planned this, but the fact that a bunch of book readers taped their friends watching the episode and that like, kind of went viral, I think brought the TV show in front of a bunch of eyes that it wouldn't have ever been in front of for that reason. Like that's sort of when the like memification, I think, of Game of Thrones started. I don't think you've got as much of that in season 1, 2, and 3. But like at the end of season 3 onward, then it sort of becomes even more part of the like online culture and that sort of thing. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's so well done. It's so, like, intimate, character-based. Richard Madden, Michelle Fairley, Una Chaplin, all of them. And I mean, like, you lose Rob and you lose Catelyn, but you also just, like, it's like the whole room gets slaughtered and all of those felt like good guys. And all the good guys lost. And at the hands of Walder Frey, not even like Tywin Lannister pulling the strings, but like Walder Frey is this guy?
Like a supposed ally too.
Yeah. But like this like creepy old lech is the one that takes down Robb Stark, who never lost a battle. And then you also get this, I think you get a closer tie between, frailty and like this feels like more of a Shakespearean sort of tragic fall than Ned Stark does, because like you can point out some things that Ned Stark does wrong in season one, but one of the most interesting things about his death in season one is like he overplayed his hand a little bit, or he was too honorable, I guess you could say, like his honor was too rigid, like some of that stuff. He didn't play smart, you know. There are things you could say about Ned, but with Rob it's just like even clearer, like he died for love, basically, right? He fell in love or fell in lust, and then he died for that. And it's funny because, like, if you rewatch season 3, there's so many times when Michelle Fairley as Catelyn says, like, this is not the wedding that Walder Frey wanted. Like, he wanted a king. He did not want my dumb brother Edmure. Thank you very much. Shout out to Tobias Menzies, who's great in that role. So yeah, it's an incredible piece of television. And then you get, lastly, to cap all of that, you get this iconic piece of music, which we actually, you know, already got, in Blackwater and various other places. But it, you know, this is straight out of the book that the Reigns of Castamere starts playing. That's the Lannister calling card. That's how you know that the Lannisters sort of orchestrated this. But like, for it to play over the credits and it's just like, this is it. Like, this is what's happened is like, anytime there's like a Ramin Djawadi music cue that it forever sticks in you. And this is one of those, you know?
Yeah. I've seen this episode a few times and this is one of the few episodes I've like really rewatched of this show. And like, it still is so intense. And I watched it, I don't know, yesterday evening before recording, and I was like bummed out for the rest of the night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like, no, I mean, it's just a funny way because it's such an affecting episode. And I think that for me, the way that it contains its dread, where Catelyn, she's like, oh my God, like, we're about to be killed, you know? And like, she knows that there's something really she can do. She tries. But I think that like, that's so chilling, you know, versus a sudden kind of thing at like, but like this kind of like dawning, like comprehension of what's happening. It's just like so well done. It's just so beautifully directed. It's so tense. The way that it's edited is perfect. It's just like, it's just striking television. And, it's still, you know, all these years later, I think is very affecting personally.
All right. What about some of the other stuff that happens in this episode? I always remember that, like, talking about memification, there's a piece of fan art that always, stuck with me from this episode, and it was, excuse me as I describe some fan art, but it's, Roose Bolton, Walder Frey, and Tywin Lannister, and they're all like jumping in the air cheering like, yay, we did it! Cause they like orchestrated the Red Wedding, basically. And then like there's a companion piece that is, Jorah and Grey Worm and Daario going, yay, we did it! Cause they like infiltrated Yunkai. And I don't know why. It's always like stuck with me that it's like, oh yeah, this other thing also happens in this episode. Like Yunkai happens or whatever, you know, like you think once again, you can only like think of the wedding from start to finish, but there's all this stuff in Yunkai. As you mentioned, there's all this stuff with, Bran and all of that. There's this huge stuff that happens with Jon and Ygritte. So.
Yeah. I like the, that rainy scene where Bran and company are hiding up in the tower, and then the wildlings, including with Jon, are down on the ground fighting, and and Oral, played by Mackenzie Crook from The Office, hears Hodor-Hodoring.
Yeah.
And looks up, you know, kind of in the rainy distance at this black window in this kind of supposedly abandoned tower, and just knowing that at that moment, Bran was right there and Jon was right there. And there's just the faint kind of like, it's just, I love when the books and when the show does that kind of eerie, just like moments of almost connection of sort of, you know, echoes heard throughout this kind of vast landscape of like, you know, someone you might know or something. I just think I like, it's so eerie and really effectively done. Yeah. And obviously this is where Jon, outs himself as a secret agent.
Right. He gets scratched up in the face, by Aurel's, bird. And then, it's astonishing to rewatch this and to watch Tormund, be so against Jon. You know, this is like, Tormund is now like largely comic relief, but it's sort of interesting to remember his origins where he wasn't like, he wasn't the funny weird ginger beard. He talked about fucking a bear, but like also, he had much more menace to him, I think, when he was in this position. And we find out that Bran can do that, that he can warg into Hodor, which is how Hodor dies. So, like, it's a kind of cute, funny scene, like, hush, Hodor, no more. Hodoring is, like, a really fun little line, but this is how Hodor dies, is Bran warging into him.
And it also is an interesting introduction of what could be a really sinister aspect of Bran's ability, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah. It's like that kind of like, it's not just an animal now. It's like you could take over someone's consciousness, kind of like in Dollhouse or something.
Absolutely. And to go back to what you said in terms of like these close call misconnections, which the show does a lot more of, I think, than the book does. We also get Arya, you know, and the Hound arriving at the twins.
Mm-hmm.
Just not in time. We get Arya, you know, witnessing them killing the direwolf. We see Arya witness them killing the direwolf. We see like Rob with direwolf head on his body. It's just like, it's all awful. So, yeah, these tragic misconnections. And, you know, many, like, this is something we can say for the show. Many seasons later, we're getting these reunions, you know, that we had been wanting, the Stark family back together. So that's a fun thing that we can experience, for as long as any of them are alive. At least they're together now in season 8. So there's that. All right. Is there anything else we want to say about this episode?
No, just that Walder Frey's a jerk and he shouldn't have done that to my rub.
Well, he gets his eventually. Yeah. Stay tuned for an interview with director David Nutter and also find out which episode we will be talking about next.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray. We're culture writers, podcasters, and hosts of the show Love to See It.
Every week, we give an unapologetically feminist dissection of reality dating shows, rom-coms, and other romance narratives. We unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
And we dive into all the details with special guests like actors, authors, and cultural critics.
You can find Love to See It wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
We are joined today by David Nutter, who has directed 6 episodes of Game of Thrones, including season 3, episode 9, The Reigns of Castamere. He's also directed 3 episodes, that's half, of the final season of Game of Thrones. David Nutter, thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to start by asking you about, specifically about Reigns of Castamere, the challenges of filming a sequence that is so hard to reset in terms of like blood and gore. What does that do to any sort of pressure on you to get it right the first take?
Really, the most important thing was the order of shooting. And what I did was I shot it pretty much in order. Like, for instance, the last thing we shot was Caitlin, her throat being slit, and Rob Stark dying, I think, were the most important moments for the people who worked on it, because, you know, there was a big situation on the set where, you know, everyone loved these people so much. You know, if you're going to have that kind of emotional set piece and everyone's feeling it as you're doing it, I think you're in the right track to do something very special. But, you know, it all kind of started for me back in season 2 when I had directed my first episode for season 2 for them. And Dave and Dan seemed to like what I did, and they started to talk to me kind of about this season 3 Reigns of Castamere episode. And, you know, that was, you know, the pressure of doing that, right, was very important.
I was rewatching the episode with the commentary on where you're with Richard and Michelle, and they're both basically openly weeping as they record the commentary with you watching this episode. You've filmed the final episode for so many actors over the years on Game of Thrones. Was that the hardest of like a cast and crew goodbye, or have there been harder days in terms of emotions running high?
That was probably the toughest by far. We were doing a part of the sequence in which Rob goes over to his wife and she's bleeding to death, and she crawls to her and then holds her in his arms and she passes. And it's a situation where, as he looks down to her, I wanted to kind of hold the camera there for a beat. So I started to say something about relationships and love and all that kind of stuff. And we had talked about this prior, that he wanted me to kind of goose him a little bit before he called cut. I started to hear weeping behind him, and the makeup and hair ladies were all so into it that it was quite moving. It was quite something. Another tough one was Jon Snow's death. That's a perfect example of me not wanting to know what happens next.
Right.
The last thing I wanted to do was to consider that, which was important not to. So
as far as you were concerned, when you were shooting that season 5 finale, you were like, this is it. Jon Snow is dead, as far as I know, and I don't want to know anymore.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I actually went to a, right after we finished the episode and it aired, I was at a function at a Democratic fundraiser, and I met President Obama, and he shook my hand with his right hand, put his left hand on my shoulder, and said, you didn't kill Jon Snow, did you? And I told him, yes, sir, he's deader than dead. Then he said, you kill all my favorite characters.
You're like, no, as far as I knew, he was dead, I promise. Like,
Absolutely. I mean, they even asked me to do a, on his last day of shooting before, on stage, which is his last day of shooting, before, you know, they even basically had me do a little say goodbye to the crew kind of thing and help, you know, and help him kind of do a big, you know, thank you so much for coming, you know, for, you know, being a great crew and support. This is one of the first crew I really worked with and so forth. So it was important That was just crazy.
So you filmed Kit Harington like doing a heartfelt goodbye to the crew of Game of Thrones. Then you did not work on the series for season 6 and season 7.
I had a surgery on my back.
I'm so sorry to hear that and so glad you're feeling better. When you were recuperating in those seasons off, because you prefer not to know what's happening in the books or happening future seasons, does that mean you watch the show just as a fan?
That's exactly what I did. Yeah, completely. You know, the Battle of the Bastards. I mean, it was just such amazing shows that came during my absence that I was like, oh my God, just to be part of that was so special. And I did nothing but do as much physical therapy and taking care of myself and getting better as soon as I could so I could actually come back and play if I could.
How did it feel when Dave and Dan are come to you and they say, not only do we want you to direct an episode in the final season, we want you to direct 3 episodes of the final season?
It was like when you're in the ocean, you can't swim, and someone throws you a life jacket. It was really, you know, after having been out of commission for a couple of years, you know, not completely, but partially with my back and so forth, it was really fantastic to be able to come back and do that and get a chance to work with people that I care so much about. And it was, the good thing was I have a good relationship with the actors and the crew and so forth, and they were happy to have me back as well. So it was really a real, definitely a homecoming. It was really quite special. I actually, in season 6, where I had to, that's when I had to like say I couldn't come back, I was scheduled to direct the Loot Train episode. And I couldn't do it, but I did go over Christmas and visited them in Spain where they were shooting with my wife, who's from Austria. We went back to Austria for Christmas, and I said, well, if we're going to go see her family in Austria for Christmas, I want to see mine, too, in Spain. So we stopped by for a couple of days, and it was really nice to get on the set, and people had, you know, so many people were happy to see me and missed me and so forth, and gave me a lot of strength to come back. And David Nance saw that I was doing better physically, and they started talking about coming back, which was really an incredible experience. And I was so appreciative to be working and working on such amazing material. And you know, a lot of times directors, we don't enjoy what we're doing so much because we're so nervous about doing it right. And we, you know, I physically and emotionally beat myself up all the time and hoping that I did well, or if I didn't know, you know, what, you know, all the different things you go through and trying to do a good job creatively. But this time I got a chance to really enjoy what I was doing and appreciate it so much. It was, I think, some of the best work I've done.
Wow. That's honestly really, that's incredible. I'm kind of overwhelmed by that. I want to ask you, for those of us who have followed the show really closely over the years, I think we're able to pick out certain writing and directorial styles. Like, I could tell you what I think a Brian Cogman written episode is, or I could tell you what I think a Miguel Sapochnik directed episode is. What do you think a David Nutter episode of Game of Thrones is?
I hope that when you watch an episode of mine, you become involved emotionally as quickly as possible, because you want to of course peel the onion back as much as you can whenever you can. The Walk of Shame was an important sequence that I directed that I really wanted. I think it's always important to put as much gray into black and white as possible, because there are no bad guys, no good guys. It's all people who want certain things for themselves and are justified in getting it. So you want to give them that respect, which is important, I think. To me, it's about finding always those different notes and so forth, and different shades of colors that the audience can get to know the character better and become more affiliated with, and also become a little more understanding of who they are.
I think this is fair play to ask you about, but please tell me if it's not. The trailer for season 8 dropped yesterday. I'm assuming there's some footage you shot in there. You do not have to tell me what. But I'm just wondering, you know, what it was like. And I know some of the stuff in the first episode has already been out there, a few seconds of footage. But what is it like to have people see, you know, footage from the episodes that you shot for the final season of Game of Thrones and all the reactions that happened so far?
Oh, it's very, very extremely exciting. And a lot of stuff was mine that I was very excited about, too. It was a lot of fun. It was really very, very cool.
And I know that usually you direct final episodes of the season, but this, you're doing the premiere That means you get a big splashy premiere at Radio City Music Hall. What does that feel like for you to have your first, like your first big episode premiere?
Truly nerve-wracking, and it also makes me appreciate how wonderful, what a good director Jeremy Podesta was, because I think that he's been doing a lot of the opening episodes of the season. It puts a lot of pressure on me, but you know, hopefully I'll it'll be okay.
Are you excited to go to the premiere?
I can't wait, Joanna. It's been a situation where we've had a pretty rough before Christmas. My wife is diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and
she goes
to the moon and so forth, and she's feeling better, and we all look forward to go as a family to this, and it'll be really special.
Oh, that'll be so great. I'm so sorry to hear that. And I wanted to close up by asking you, without spoiling a single drop of the final season, what are you most hoping people will get from this final season that you worked on?
I know that the writers have done this already, and everyone else, but I hope that they feel that, you know, because lots of times people watch shows and they get to the final few episodes, they get really disappointed in it, where they take it. And I think that everyone on the show, especially Dave and Dan, basically have worked extremely hard to give us an ending and give us a finale and give us a final season that is worthy.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing so much that you've been going through. I'm really sorry to hear it. I've really so loved your work over the years on Game of Thrones.
Thank you so much, Joanna. Thank you.
All right, that is it for us. We do want to mention once again before we go, in case you have not subscribed already, that you can go to vanityfair.com/thrones and put in the promo code THRONES, and you get 50% off Vanity Fair for a whole year. That's print, digital, tote bag, no paywall. vanityfair.com/thrones, promo code THRONES. Get in there so you can read all of our Game of Thrones coverage. And what else will we be sending people, Richard? Now,
I don't know what we're going to be sending people, but if you don't do it, we're going to kill your family at a wedding.
So get on it.
You got to do it.
In the meantime, until we return next time, where can people find you, Richard?
And, you know, just hotering around. On Twitter, at Rylos. Where are you going to be?
Well, obviously I will be taking Yunkai from the back. But also you can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. Next week we'll be back. We're into season 4. We'll be talking about season 4, episode 1, Two Swords. So we will be back, and we will see you then.